You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, the letter N, sweettea.com. You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. As we know, back in October, the foundation, the bedrock of Asheville City, specifically the men, shifted underneath our own feet here in Asheville. And the sandbox that we play in, literally the game of soccer, changed. We picked up our toys and we moved to another sandbox. And what I'm referring to is we went from the, you know, amazing rough around the edges, wild, wild west nature of the National Premier Soccer League, the NPSL, where we were playing Greenville FC and Chattanooga FC and InterNashville and Atlanta SC. And we picked up our toys and we moved to another league. We moved to the United Soccer League, League 2. And today with me, I've got Chris Madden. He's down in Tampa in the national offices. And he's going to talk to us and kind of explain to us a little bit about what Asheville City has gotten themselves into, for the better or worse. But how you doing, Chris?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on the call today.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me. So, yeah. Chris, I think we're just going to be very blunt during the course of this conversation. And one of the very first things that I know I've had a lot of Asheville City fans come up to me and ask me about is what it means to become part of USL League 2, what it means to become a franchise. And I think the immediate thing that everybody starts to worry about is that we have become almost like a McDonald's franchise, or we, you know, if I'm really going to tie it into something that a lot of people in Asheville understand, we almost became like Wicked Weed when we Wicked Weed sold to Budweiser. And there's just a lot of hurt feelings in town as something that was really seen as Asheville through and through, and seen as the forerunner in independent brewing, you know, kind of became a franchise to a larger company and lost some of its independence. Can you explain what Asheville City has become to USL?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll probably start off by addressing the word franchise. I think it's probably the biggest stigma there, and one that, you know, although from like a legal standpoint, that's what we do. You know, we sell franchises. But really the word franchise just means you have a little bit more security and that you're a part of something a little bit bigger and realistically it just more secure, than just being an independent member. But ultimately we don't reach out to a Lionsbridge and tell them that their branding needs to be this color, or that they can't have a lion because we have 10 other different groups in League 2 that that are also Lions. Mm-hmm. You know, we want whatever branding, whatever makes sense for Asheville, whatever really gets the fans to come to the games and really the community to get behind the team to remain. Clearly, that's been the success of the club thus far, is the tribalism and the community rallying behind the club and really just making it their own. And we're in no position, nor would we even be in the right to step in and say that you have to change who you're about. That's just not what we're about in League 2 and really the USL as a whole. I like to think that, you know, if we're looking at other leagues and things like that from across the US, you know, there are certain rules and things like that that come along with being a part of the USL, but ultimately the culture and the identity, that's up to the club, and we try to get out of the way of all that and just let that be. I think probably evidence of that is Forward Madison, clubs like that that have kind of gotten and developed this rapid culture of, you know, hyper tribalism and just rallying behind their hometown club, and just running away with it and letting it become what it is today. Absolutely. If that answers your question.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And so I guess what does come with USL as part of the package. I think the immediate thing that I've been excited to talk to people about, because it was very frustrating with the NPSL, was a lack of kind of national cohesion. You know, within our division, within the Southeast, we kind of were able to banter back and forth with friends and, you know, that supported other teams. And we knew what Internashville and what Greenville were doing, and we kept up with them. But it was very hard to know what was going on over in California. It was very hard to have the league highlight a game of the week or even find whether it be the games, because honestly, there was no requirement to stream games. And so we had owners in the stands, you know, just streaming on Facebook Live. It was just very, very frustrating. And of course, that kind of comes with the Wild Wild West nature of playing in that league. But what does come with USL?
First and foremost, speaking for the office here in general, I think I'll probably give a little bit of history just in terms of the rapid growth of the USL. When I started with the company about 3.5 years ago, we had 35 employees and probably about a fourth of the office space. Now we're pushing 90 employees, and the majority of those employees, although we've gained more people to help with operations and, you know, ticketing, club services, those types of things, is really our just giant content machine that we have here. We have probably 40, 50 people that are just strictly dedicated to content, or at least supporting the content side. So it's been really exciting and just really cool to be a part of this type of company, really, that's just dedicated to supporting our clubs in that way. But other than that, you get the, if I'm trying to do like a sales pitch to a club, like why League Two versus another league, you get the added infrastructure of like support that's basically going to be given to the clubs whenever they need it. We have multiple departments here that are just strictly dedicated to helping the clubs. So if Asheville wants to learn more about a better ticketing platform, well, we have people here in the office that can directly take their phone call. If they want to learn more about like broadcast standards, because they want to increase one camera stream to multiple cameras, and like what's the best way to do that? Well, we have a broadcast department that can help and pick up the phone and talk to these guys if they're interested in doing so. So, I mean, it's pretty much a service industry that we offer to any one of the clubs, and ultimately we can do that in any one of the areas. I don't know, and I can't speak on behalf of the other leagues, but I would imagine that they don't have, at least at the level that we're talking about, they don't have the office size and the knowledge level that we possess here at the USL. And I say that just more of like out of pride of working here and being a part of this. But I'm really happy to work with the people that I work with, and then also happy to be able to share those types of people with the clubs that are a part of League Two as well. I think that's probably the coolest part of my job is watching the clubs grow in whatever area they want to.
Yeah, and so much of that also is, you know, the different philosophies of a centralized league office as a decentralized. And there's advantages, pros and cons, disadvantages to all of this. And one of the things I know with the NPSL is that they were very proud of the independence of each of their clubs, which, of course, I mean, that's very American. But one of the disadvantages that also came along with that was you had clubs that were, you know, very, very well-founded and well-run, and you knew exactly what you were getting. If you showed up there on a game day, you could flip on YouTube at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night and watch their stream and know it was going to be a good stream. But at the same time, they were playing in the exact same table and same division as a club that, you know, bounced around from pitch to pitch, never knowing where their home ground was. They didn't stream. They had no social media presence, no website to speak of, to update. And so everybody was independent, but it was for the better or worse. So the standards, I think, is something that I think the Asheville fans are really, really going to appreciate. And again, with those standards, can you talk a little bit about the Deep South division that Asheville City has found themselves in? Full transparency, I'm not quite sure when this is going to come out, but we're recording on the 23rd and the schedule is going to drop tomorrow. So I'm extremely excited about that, obviously, because again, that's something that's coming out in January, whereas we're usually actually used to getting these around March, maybe. So we can even plan out our summer a little bit better. Can you speak to the Deep South a little bit?
Well, I mean, aside from Asheville, I'll just go ahead and name the clubs there. So Charlotte Eagles, Dalton Red Wolves, which again is a under 23 affiliate of Chattanooga Red Wolves, Discovery Soccer Club, Peachtree City MOBA, South Carolina United Bantams. New club for us there this year is East Atlanta FC. A new club again for us this year, is it's going to be a trend that I'll say, is Southern Soccer Academy out of Atlanta as well. And then South Georgia Tormenta too. So among those groups, I mean, from a competition standpoint, it's going to be a pretty competitive division. So the on-field product is going to be it's going to be pretty good. I think that division last year came down to the last game of the season in terms of who would be the divisional winner and who was going to advance in playoffs. The Bantams were fighting for points to be able to make it into the playoffs this past year. Actually, they hosted the first round of conference playoffs, in Columbia, South Carolina. So it was cool. I actually attended and was there, but it was cool for them to host that one. But Tormenta, obviously super, super dedicated to developing an academy structure. And that League Two part has always been the beginning and the most important part of that club. And now obviously they've moved on to League One as well, but they had the commitment to maintain the League Two team, of which they heavily utilize on a daily basis. I think, in fact, the first team trains on the field right next to the League Two team. So, you know, immediate integration there for whatever they're looking forward to. Charlotte Eagles, you know, won the PDL championship, not too long ago. So it's already a competitive club. And then we have a bunch of other groups that are just pulling from top colleges that are in and around that area. So, that's my elevator pitch on the Deep South division. But hopefully that gives you some type of an idea of the types of people you guys will be seeing on the weekend.
Yeah. And I didn't know a lot about Southern Soccer and East Atlanta. And one of the things that I'm learning, which I find absolutely fascinating, is the different utilities of the different League Two teams. So often in the NPSL, what we were finding were clubs that either the NPSL team, almost like what Asheville City started off as, it's just what we were. We were just the local amateur soccer team in town, you know, almost like a standalone independent minor league baseball team. And then there was these other organizations that, you know, use their NPSL team for different purposes, almost as something at the top of their academy. And that's exactly the same thing that I'm seeing in USL, except there's even a level above League Two, generally League One, and I guess some championship teams. NCFC is the one that jumps out at me right off the top. But even, I guess, the Charlotte Independents, because they brought the Discoveries underneath them, kind of, sort of. When you show up, you know, I'm firmly putting my tongue in the side of my cheek when I pick on the mantra of path to pro, because it kind of is a path to pro for a lot of these organizations, because it truly starts in their hometown academies and then goes all the way up to what they have, which is a pro team. I know one of our owners showed me a stat when I was asking him about this, that you guys were throwing around at the championship game. Not quite sure what to call that. I think you guys even had a little bit of trouble figuring out what to call it.
It is officially something like 75%
of your players in that game had come up through League Two.
Yeah, so it's basically that gap, right? We're trying to bridge what is youth soccer that traditionally ends at about 18, 19 years old, where they age out and then they go out into the world. And, you know, the current basically average age of a pro soccer player is, you know, 22, 23 years old, roughly, at about the USL level. It's getting younger, for sure. But League Two steps into the space that they are trying to provide opportunities for, again, as you mentioned too, a lot of these clubs here have youth academies that, whether or not these young kids playing on their ECNL, DA teams, or just top youth teams at the youth club have a chance to then play in the summer in and amongst the best top college talent in the area and come back and play for their club. So it's kind of a cool hybrid where even if you are done playing for your youth club, as an example, if I played for Peachtree City growing up in Georgia and I went off to go play at Wake, and then during the summer I went back and I could basically either choose to stay at home and take online classes and then continue to have an opportunity to play and be seen by, you know, basically USL coaches in USL League Two. I think that's a win-win for everybody, being that the kids get to come back and still be a part of their community and still represent their community and go on and play, but then also have the opportunity to continue to further their soccer dreams.
That's the division we're in right now. And I know when Asheville City joined League Two, they weren't immediately placed in a division. And I spoke with a couple fans of Tobacco Road and NCFC U23s and talked to them about the South Atlantic that they're in?
That's correct.
Yeah. There was kind of a debate. Does it make more sense to play in the South Atlantic and travel to the Virginia Beach teams? Or does it make sense to be in the Deep South and go all the way down to Statesboro? And things were just kind of kicked back and forth. But I had a few people kind of stop me and remind me that, especially in League Two, things are never kind of set in stone. So despite these kind of natural rivalries and these regional rivalries that pop up, things can move a lot, and oftentimes the divisions do. Is there a possibility, because, I mean, I actually think the schedule comes out tomorrow and you guys still have a club that you haven't announced because you've added a couple dozen, it seems like, this offseason. But is there a possibility as maybe the Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland area fills out a bit more, maybe those Virginia Beach teams could find regional rivalries there, that we could one day see kind of an all Carolinas division unto itself?
Well, first of all, for the Carolina clubs, right, that's the dream, right? to have the all the Carolinas playing against each other, right? Because mm-hmm. I passively watch the rivalries there, and it runs pretty deep. So that would be pretty exciting. But just to speak to the geographics of it all in general, you know, we have clubs that have interest in the league and can come in and be a part of this. And just to make sense geographically for the clubs is difficult in that area. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're looking at a map, and I have it, you know, permanently ingrained in my mind because that's part of my job, is to look at this map and then try to make sense of it all. They sit right in the middle of those two divisions. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a decision of, well, and I've been to Asheville, and I am in no way an expert, so I'm not gonna claim that in any way. But I did try to drive through the mountains, and trying to get what would be an hour of driving in Florida turns into, you know, maybe 2 hours or more up in that area because of the hills and the mountains mm-hmm. and things like that too. So especially if you're going anywhere over the Appalachian or maybe up to Virginia, whatever the case. So it was a tough decision, and really we could have gone either way on it, to be honest. But in terms of the future, my answer to any one of those, if this could happen, it's a possibility, absolutely. But as we all understand, this is as much logic as we can possibly place on this. Mm-hmm. We try to keep them as geographically close to each other as much to help limit travel. Mm-hmm. Limiting travel helps the players. It helps the fans. It helps the budgets for the clubs. So the clubs can actually stay around and really participate for many, many years and try to grow in other areas. So that's really where we look first. And then if we can get that competitive advantage and that, you know, competitive rivalry in it, that's a major, major plus.
So one of the things that we have curated over the past couple of years and participated in is a couple friendly rivalries. Even when we were in the NPSL, we were playing USL League Two teams as friendlies. Very specifically, we were playing the Tri-City Otters and That we actually have a cup with them that we compete for. And then for the past two seasons, we had played the Bantams. So we will now play the Bantams competitively for within the same table. But does the league suggest or recommend friendlies with other USL League 2 teams? And obviously, they don't mind also potential friendlies with NPSL teams, correct?
No, we don't mind friendlies with any club. I think if you can fit it into the schedule and it makes sense, why not? You know, that just means if you can get it at home, another chance for your fans to come out and watch you guys play somebody. I think it's really, you know, we kind of get excited about, well, who's the opponent and what's the cool edge about it, right? You might be able to even, you know, play against some of the USL League One or championship teams in that area if they, you know, have a spot in their schedule too. But then that's the also advantage of being a part of the USL is that those communication processes become just a little bit easier. That you can get that type of information to then reach out to those clubs. So, you know, short answer, no, go for it. You know, we're all for that.
Let's assume the best. Asheville City comes in, we're able to recruit maybe even a higher caliber of player in League 2 as opposed to the NPSL. That's not a knock on the NPSL by any, and I'm speaking to my fans out there, my listeners, I don't know if they're fans of me or not. It's not so much a knock on the NPSL. You go out there and you talk to any actual player and they, for their career purposes, do actually believe that League 2 provides, a path to pro. Their college coaches are more likely to release them to a League 2 team rather than an NPSL team. So it's just a fact. Whether you are okay with it or not, it's a fact. But Asheville City comes in, we knock it out of the park, and we make the playoffs. What do the playoffs look like in League 2?
So we have 12 divisions across four separate conferences. What that means is within each conference, there are three divisions. Each divisional winner is guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. And then amongst your conference, the second highest team by way of points and then our tie-breaking disseminations will be the wild card in that division. So, and as it would be for anybody, one plays four, two plays three, and they come together in, what is three consecutive weekends of playoffs for us. First weekend is, what we call the conference round. And really simply put, they come in and they would play either a Friday, Saturday or a Friday, Sunday format. And they would play the conference semifinal. Should they win the conference semifinal? That next game would then be the conference final. Should you win the conference final, you go to the USL League 2 semifinal, which is that following weekend. And then the following weekend after that, should you win, should be the USL League 2 final, which again, this year is going to be on August 1st.
And is that played in a centralized location or is it played at the home ground of the highest seed?
So we always try to go with the highest seed possible. Mm-hmm. But the way that the process works for us, if you'd like to basically host in the playoffs, is that roughly about the end of June, when the table starts to maybe settle and we start to figure out some teams that might pull away, I'll send out an email to all the clubs all across USL League 2 and just ask them if they would like to be a host for the conference round. Really simply, they just have to put together a document that says, yes, we will meet all of these standards to be able to host, you know, the conference rounds, and it would be nothing that you wouldn't expect of any League 2 venue, so it's really shouldn't be a problem. There are a couple venues, as an example, the Villages down here in Florida, they are currently constructing a stadium, so last year they couldn't host because they didn't have lights at their primary venue. So we said, well, guys, you know, that's probably not preferred because we're going to try to play this game at night. We just look for those minimum standards to basically be in place. And then we try to go with the first one on the list. And then should they not meet that or should they not even make the playoffs, then we move to the next one down the line.
Chris, you've been on many podcasts, and I went back and listened to a couple of them in preparation to speak with you. And one of my favorite lower league podcasts that I listen to every year, and it's unfortunately going to be on hiatus this summer, is the Amateur Hour with Chris and Ben, who a lot of Carolina fans know them. They're down in Charlotte, but they've gone all over the region. And last year when you were talking to them, you talked about, and it was, I guess, right before the 2019 season, you talked about some of the advances that USL had recently kind of undertaken and different ways that they had attempted to connect their different tiers from L2, or from League 2 to the what was the inaugural season, League 1, to the championship. And some of those just really, really kind of caught my attention and blew my mind. And one of them was the kind of shared scouting that happens all the way down from to League 2 and how it's shared with League 1 and championship. Can you talk to the effect of, I think the thing that really captured my attention was you were mentioning the wearable technology that is then eventually shared with other teams.
Yeah, so glad you brought that up, because that was one thing that we have gone through and we've actually deepened and hopefully made it a little bit easier for all the clubs. This year, my co-director, Jason Collister, who is in charge of technical development for League 2, went through and he was working with a company called Football ISM. Really simply, Football ISM is a scouting network software platform. Really what it's going to do is it's going to make all of our scouting data digital. Whereas before in the past, we would ask our coaches to go in and submit an Excel sheet that listed the players based on US soccer's parameters of rating them on a certain numeric scale and you know, six core categories. Now we're going to have them go on. They're going to do the exact same thing, but it's going to be a little bit more intuitive and it's going to be a little bit easier. I think in terms of anything like this, because our scouts are, you know, they're a part of technical staffs of either current League 2 teams or our college coaches in the summer that are looking to try to gain experience or are going to be going to watch their own players anyway, as they're just trying to stay up to date on them during the summer, will then submit the data to us. Anytime that you can make that path of least resistance a little bit easier by way of us moving it to a digital platform, it's going to make it that much more accessible for us, and the quantity of it is going to go higher. So that means that there's going to be more data on more players and it's going to be more accurate. So that to me excites me, because now we have more reputable data that we can then share with these pro team staffs at Championship and League One to have them track players along the way. And in fact, last year we had 26 scouts that were all across the country. Those scouts all then reported to a conference leader who was a part of the technical committee, made up of four members, one from each conference. And they would then share that information with Jason on a phone call. Basically, this player is doing really well. This player is doing really well. So that they would get a little bit more attention, the players that really, really stood out. But all of the data would then just be shared. But this year, in fact, we're actually going to have a member from each one of our clubs. So 80 plus teams are going to have at least one technical representative that is going to be in charge of submitting data to this network. So again, just speaking to the volume of it, you know, we're basically quadrupling the number that we had last year. Not exact math on that one, but just making it you know, much, much larger, more data, and then more information for our friends up in Championship and League One. So we can just continue to further those conversations and just make it easier for the players to be seen. That's number one. So hopefully that answered your question.
Mm-hmm. How will video of games be shared?
You know, this past year we entered into a partnership with MyCujo. And MyCujo has been a leader in terms of, I would say, like this type of level of soccer. But I think just candidly, MyCujo has kind of gotten a, you know, sometimes a bad rap for
really
the types
I hadn't
of streams. Yeah, if you can imagine, I think I'm saying that, you know, as, you know, politically, but the reason for the most part, you know, is if there is a person that is streaming, you know, with little to no data, you know, probably about 500 yards away with their, you know, iPhone generation one, you know, kind of from really far away. So that, that kind of, you look at my Cujo and that's like, what the heck is this? You know, so I, as a fan, 100%, I get it, but it's not the fault of the platform. It's the fault of the user on that end. Tri-City Otters this year, they had a three camera stream and put it on my Cujo and it was fantastic. We had other clubs that did the same thing, and you know, that it's really up to the user on their end, rather than the platform. Now, just like any platform, they are a company that is just exploding. So when we took a look at them, it was really what they offered on their platform that really excited us. And I'll go into a couple of those just so people can understand. And then I'll end with a comment that should make it all make sense. But, you know, when you go into my Cujo, you have the ability to have a score bug that's already integrated into the platform. So you'll know the score of the game. It has a clock so you can start the game, which is important if you're watching a broadcast to know what time it is in the match. You can have highlights created immediately following the match. My Cujo this past year has had an addition to their platform where as soon as the game is ended, they have all of the goals, all of the shots basically compiled into a brief highlight package, and the clubs can then share that immediately after the game, which is a really cool platform that clubs at this level don't always have a video editor that's available. So just having that tool available was super helpful. But then it also has the ability to monetize it. You have the ability to sell sponsorships and things like that on it that makes it really easy. Not everyone knows how to use an OBS software where you can inlay graphics and things on top of a stream, but my Cujo has that ability. You just need to know how to input a PNG into a choose a dropdown file. So it makes it a little bit more easy for everyone to do that. I say this all with the last comment of our teams are not required to stream on my Cujo. We allow them to stream wherever they choose. We just have this partnership as an additional tool to give our teams the ability to make it that much easier for them to follow them. And then on top of that, it gives them another tool in general to potentially engage with sponsors and try to, you know, at least try to get a little bit closer to making some money at the amateur level in terms of, you know, where they're going with that. So, you know, it's really just a matter of trying to help our clubs, you know, reach a larger fan base.
So, again, you alluded to it. As more leagues have actually started to move to this platform, I believe some NPSL teams were using it last year. They used it for the NPSL Founders Cup. NISA, I believe, has said that all of their games will be streamed on it. League 2 is now using it. And for anybody who hasn't used it, some, you know, there are some drawbacks just kind of on accessing it. They don't have some smart TVs, Roku, things of that nature. There's not an app for it per se. Now, I say all of that. My experience with it has actually been almost exclusively positive. The Atlanta Silverbacks used it. I think New Orleans, the Jesters used it when we were playing them a couple seasons ago. And just like you said, a lot of times it has less to do with the platform and more to do with the actual streaming capabilities of the facility that they're playing in. Moreover, Dens and some of those, you know, NPSL board members are actively working with the platform to improve it. We started an amazing Twitter thread maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago where he, you know, started crowdsourcing feedback. There was some people much, much smarter than I were and that, you know, were throwing out technical terms and bit rates per second and uploading this. And he took all of that back to the platform and said, this is what people are experiencing. We need to fix this. And I believe towards the end of the Founders Cup, they actually did get the platform working a little bit better. You said we're not required to use it because we do use YouTube to great effect. And as far as I know of, we've never really had problems with it. But is there a requirement to show the games at all?
So, I mean, and this is the larger part of the conversation with streaming. There are multiple different things that have to come into play if you're going to do and stream a game. You can't 100% rely on LTE or cell tower service to basically give you the proper Wi-Fi, because it, in a lot of places, maybe in the middle of a field, it's not the best quality. So in terms of us looking at the choice of deciding to mandate streaming for the league or allowing our clubs to make the choice, we saw it by way of two different avenues. If we were to mandate streaming and basically tell our teams to do it, of which we don't want to be, if we're not ready, telling our teams that they have to do this, because the result is going to be that person with the Generation 1 iPhone that basically has to do it because the big league office is telling them to do it. So they're satisfying the requirement. But what we did say is you don't have to stream your games. We highly encourage you to, because there's multiple benefits of it. However, you do have to record your game, and it has to be at this type of image quality. It has to be at this type of height, which is just simply, if you could think of some type of press box area, that type of angle, what they call camera one, one that just pans back and forth and follows the match and does those types of things. And it has to be uploaded to MyCujo after the fact, because they have that function. So I'm proud to say that last year, we had about 98% of all of the League 2 games uploaded to the MyCujo platform. Obviously, not all those were live. You know, we had almost half of the games produced live. And that number, since I've been with the company, has grown from, it was 20 teams back in 2017, and it's grown to, which is a really, it's a small number, but the technology and things like that have just completely exploded to where we had, you know, 56% of our games streamed. So by way of that number continuing to rise, our goal in the next couple of years is to get 70 to 80% of our games streamed live. Luckily, you're in an area where a lot of these teams are committed to streaming their games, one of which, Tormenta, does a fantastic job of streaming their games, because they partner with Georgia Southern and their sports administration or broadcast department. A lot of the students there at the University of Georgia Southern, they take that on, and they love doing that, you know, for the team. So it's a as close to a ESPN level broadcast that you can come to on their end. And I'm looking down this list here, and I'm seeing a lot of other clubs that stream their games too. So the return of when you'll be able to see those games, as soon as the match ends, they have 72 hours to upload that game. Now that's a little bit of a gap in between when the game ends and when that is. But really simply put, again, we want to work with our teams here. And if, you know, we basically say you got to have it done within 2 hours, well, there might be some technological issue that goes on or something like that, which we fully understand. So what we say is, if for some reason you can't upload your game, you know, that's, you know, we're sorry. Can you get it on a digital platform? Send it to the league office. We'll do it for you. You know, we have staff members here internally that can help with that. You know, so we're really committed to getting those games live and available for, or as live as possible and available to all of the members of League 2, whether that be players, coaches, fans, and any one of our communities, to be able to watch those games, just so you can learn a little bit more about the opponents.
Yeah, and that's especially helpful to maniacs like me who will watch a game two or three times trying to find something out, because I still don't always understand the sport. But at least no more Facebook live streaming, you know, from a shaky Generation 1 iPhone. That I'm completely behind. So, Chris, the last thing before I let you go, one of my favorite things that Asheville City has done is it has not yet, and it's going into its fourth year of existence, it has not yet rested on its laurels. Every year, they reinvent themselves in some way. In between the first and second season, they announced the Just Play initiative, and the flag that they firmly planted in the ground above everything else was the creation of a women's team. And then in between season 2 and 3, they come in and they, you know, again, to further pull out that Just Play initiative, they announced the Asheville City Academy, an academy system that is going to provide professional development for players at a junction in their career, whether they're 17, 18, 19, or 20, at no cost, zero cost to the players whatsoever. and give them exposure to professional training, professional nutrition advice, video sessions that maybe they haven't been exposed to. And last year, Nashville City Academy, completely funded by sponsorships and alcohol wristbands sold at the games throughout the course of the season, was able to provide this opportunity to 30 young men and 30 young women. And I was excited to see, you know, even from the outside, though I didn't quite understand what it was at the time, that USL announced kind of an unofficial fourth tier to their system, you know, again, Championship, League One, League Two, and then this USLA almost. And they announced an academy competition. And it's not if I'm interpreting it correctly, it's not a true soccer competition in the vein of a table that throughout the course of the season, these teams will travel to different places and play each other. It's something a little bit different, a little bit unique. Could you explain a little bit about that? Because I think this is something that Asheville, as they get their academy up and going, could really, really play a big part in and hopefully do some damage in.
First off, just kudos to Asheville for fully funding an academy of that type of size. I mean, that's something that the youth soccer realm has not been able to figure out and or do, and truly is just not committed to. So really, that's a special thing, and definitely celebrate that, because that's really cool to hear. And in terms of the USL Academy Cup initiative, I like to frame it in the way of, there is a, like you said, a table and standings and those types of things. And then there's like a showcase type model. And what we looked at when we were starting this initiative was a showcase type model, because at the end of the day, the goal of the USL Academy is to try to get these young talented players in front of as many pro team eyeballs as we possibly can. And the best way to do that is to get all of the youth academies from our, you know, pro team or first team affiliates that we're calling it, our first team affiliates that have youth properties, to come into one location and basically showcase their talents against each other. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be a part of the Western Conference event, where we came to San Antonio and we basically had 4 days of games and programming and things like that for the coaches and the players to take part of. You know, it's not just the games. It's, you know, a pro pathway panel where we talk about, you know, bringing the players in front of guys that have gone on to play professional soccer and allow them the ability to ask questions, and really for those pro players to tell their stories, of which it varies. But then the meat of the whole thing, which is just a showcase event. And it's really cool to be able to come together and bring, you know, Union Omaha's first ever academy, which, you know, for the record, that was the first game that was played in a Union Omaha shirt, was an academy event, which is really cool to see. And it was, I mean, their branding is fantastic. So it was awesome to, you know, basically see that on the field. They were awesome. But these kids came from Nebraska and, you know, places where, by way of the kids telling us this, they never thought that they were going to make it out of Nebraska to be able to be in a place where they could, you know, be showcased and have their talents showcased. That's basically the whole initiative, is to try to connect even further the pathway to professional soccer, starting from youth and then being showcased by all these, you know, first team opportunities. And the goal eventually is that these pro clubs, whether they be a part of their network or just a neighboring network, be able to put these players into, their pipeline and just keep an eye on them, you know, from the age of basically 13, 14 years old, and follow them all the way until they're ready or not to make the jump to pro soccer. Mm-hmm. And we're already kind of seeing trends, younger players, you know, example is Orange County and San Antonio and some of these other clubs that are committed to signing young players, and giving them opportunities and true first team minutes, in these areas. And, you know, we're proud to say that League Two, League One, Championship, they're all a part of this academy initiative, and we're all driving in the same direction.
It is really cool when I was looking over the participants to see, you know, immediately the first thing you were going to think of to kind of keep it North Carolina specific is you're like, okay, cool. Obviously NCFC is going to be involved and maybe the Independents with some of their, they just picked up, I mean, tens of thousands of youth players with some of their youth club purchases and bringing them all under. The Fusion obviously have a massive academy system, but you know, you weren't just seeing that. You were seeing these kind of one-off, unaffiliated, independent, League Two teams playing against championship teams in this academy competition, which I thought was really cool. Well, Chris, thank you so much. I very much, again, appreciate you taking time out of your day to kind of catch us up on what the sandbox looks like that we have decided to move into as we go into the Asheville City's men's fourth season. You know, maybe we could reach back out towards the end of the season and see how you're feeling about things. And I can kind of relay some information down to the league office about what we are experiencing.
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Chris. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Again!